Welcome to Station 40. I'm Cindy. I'm one of the collective members here, and there's a bunch of us who are collective members of this space that has been here for 6 or 7 years. It's we're proud that it's one of the probably last remaining collective radical spaces, anarchist, anti-authoritarian, anti-police, etc. Spaces in San Francisco, and we regularly host events here, and we survive by people pitching in donations and us pitching in time and people coming to do talks like tonight. We're really happy to have Anarchists Against the Wall tonight. And I just wanted to announce a couple things. One is we have a Station 40 email list. If you want to find out about events, you can write your name down. If you think you're on the list, sign again, because our list is incapacitated, so we're starting a new one. And if you, this is a fundraiser, so at some point we'll pass a jug or something to throw money in and be really generous, because Anarchists Against the Wall are fighting lots of legal battles, and they'll explain where the money's going. And in the back, there's some PM Press books that we are selling here to raise money for a new projector. Apologies, our projector is not the greatest. It's lived a long life here, and we're about to get a new one. And the last thing is I just want to announce a few upcoming Station 40 events. We always do Food Not Bombs on Thursday, and folks are welcome to come by and cook and eat. And this week, next Tuesday, there's a Photoshop Skillshare from 6 to 8 here. Next Wednesday from 7 to 10 is our regular anarchist salon and potluck dinner. And the question is actually focusing on anarchist and radical spaces in the Bay Area. Thursday, January 27th, is Mozart's birthday and Food Not Bombs, so there's going to be acoustic music celebrating Mozart and other types of music, I guess.
You play the magic flute?
I don't know. You can come play it. All right, and then Saturday, January 29th, there's some flyers in the back. Seattle Solidarity Network are coming down to talk about the really cool direct action stuff they do to when people have trouble with their landlords or things like that, they basically go and deal with it directly. And lastly, on Sunday, January 30th, from 7 to 11, we're doing the second Queer Autonomous Zone, which was really fun last time, queer performance art, and it's around Gertrude Stein's work. So that is listed on the board outside, and again, sign the email list that's going around if you want more information. Okay, and a special little interlude before Anarchists Against the Wall is a film that's going to be shown in the Bay Area called Occupation Has No Future. So we're going to do like a 5-minute clip, and Matt and David are going to talk about it first.
Cool. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. Thanks for your support, Anarchists Against the Wall. My name is Matt. This is David. We are part of a group called Dialogues Against Militarism, which is a Bay Area group that basically fundraised and organized for a year to send three veterans and three anti-war, anti-militarist activists Israel and Palestine to do a delegation about militarism, the effects of militarism, how people are resisting militarism, and this is a trailer of the movie that has come out.
So I went along with the DAM delegation and we made a film discussing militarism in Israel and the ways that Israelis and Palestinians are working together against the occupation. So we don't want to take too much time away from the event tonight. We're going to show like a 3-minute trailer for the film. It's showing February 3rd, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow, and we're going to pass some flyers around while the trailer is showing. Please come out. It talks a lot about the work that Anarchists Against the Wall and other organizations do there.
Cool, thanks.
Even though history has proven every military occupied civilians became corrupt and took down civil society with it, we all grew up on believing that we're different.
The fact is that Israeli children are educated to be soldiers and good soldiers, right? Obedient soldiers.
Well, this system, it creates something. It's hard to break it.
I started questioning the army, so I just questioned everything about the army. And everything that my parents or my teachers or my friends told me or my textbooks taught me.
It started by saying, I won't do these things. And then I realized, no, I won't be able to do anything that has to do with the occupation. I want to be a partner to the Palestinian, not their enemy.
Occupation isn't something happening on a different continent for us. It's something which is happening like 5 minutes away from our house.
They're working with us with two hands. By the first time, they're giving a permission for more and more settlements, by second hand the demolition, the Palestinian houses in Jerusalem and in the West Bank.
There's a mission where that is called security. On the excuse of security, the Israeli authorities can prevent the Palestinians from any of their basic rights.
Since I've been 16 years old, I never left this at all. Every day I have to show it to the soldiers. Every day I have to prove who I am. What kind of man is this?
At first you want to believe that wasn't you going around the streets doing it, you know, the uniform, the helmet, the rifle. But I think the most important thing that brought me to where I am today was the minute of understanding that I'm going to give back my uniform, I'm going to give back my weapons, I'm going to give back everything, but I can't give back myself.
It's not about behaving well in the system, it's about the system. So it's about occupation, you know.
Every Friday we go to the wall, we are against this wall. You know, this wall is dividing our land, dividing our relative. So we are against this wall.
Just to be here, just to live here, in spite of all the obstacles or the bad condition here, is a resistance against this occupation.
I'm not an idealist. I don't think that we will change the world. The world is going to be like this, I think, forever. But it doesn't say that you must accept it.
The history told us occupation should be finished. Racism should be finished. And it will finish. But here we need to see how we can finish it.
Working in the trailer, so I don't really need to talk much anymore. I try to think how to start because it's trailer. I got a bit of my set of mind. My name is Abrasha. I'm a more or less active member in Anarchists Against the Wall. More as kind of a foreign minister at the moment, doing a tour around the US to make more relationship with more communities and to raise money for the struggle. This is a fundraising tour, as mentioned before, because we're facing a lot of legal defense costs. We have a lot of cases we need lawyer for, and I'll explain later more about it. I'm not going to talk about myself, it's not about me. You can ask personal questions at the time, but it's definitely not about me. I'm here to, first of all, to introduce you to the reality in Palestine, and after I'll show you what we think is a violent reality in Palestine, why there is resistance, and how we as Anarchists Against the Wall take part in it. When you ask people, and people hear about Israel and Palestine, it's mostly only during some kind of a physical violence. It's a violence when there are casualties, other people being injured or died during attacks in Gaza, during suicide bomber in Israel years ago. People tend to forget their daily life in the West Bank and also in Gaza. Gaza is more or less now in the news because of the incident of the flotilla almost a year ago or 8 months ago. But the West Bank has a daily life under the occupation. And this daily life, as I see it, and many of my friends and the people that I'm working with, is life under occupation and a violent life. When you live, as this guy told you, from the age of 16, he has a ID card because he needs to be able to go from one place to another. He needs to be able to go and visit his family in another city. This is a violation of his basic right. It's a violent reality. I don't know how much you know about Israel and Palestine, but to put things in proportion, Israel and Palestine together fits in 11 times into the state of Washington. Take out the Israeli side, and only the West Bank, where what I'm going to talk about tonight is where the Anarchists Against the Wall is active. The West Bank is around the size of Delaware. It's pretty small.
I think these days don't take the numbers as a absolute number. It's more or less what I know or think. There are around 400 checkpoints and roadblocks. Make your movement restriction on your basic movement inside Palestine. There might be slightly less. At the peak, there were almost 700. What these roadblocks and checkpoints are? It can be a road that connect your farm, your village to your farm. So instead of going to your farm, you need to drive an hour and a half around it. You want to go from your village to the nearest big city, you need to go around a road that is only for Israelis and for internationals. As a Palestinian, you're not allowed to go on it. It can be a checkpoint where you want to go to pray during the Ramadan in Jerusalem, and you need to come at 4 o'clock in the morning to be able to be there at 12. So you have all this kind of control by the Israelis on everything in your life. So one thing would be the roadblocks, the other thing is the presence of the army and the security forces. You see towers everywhere when you drive in Palestine. Watchtowers, no, you don't see the faces of them. You see cameras, you know there's somebody with a gun over there, controlling every movement in your land. There is the visual presence of the army, of course. The jeeps are going everywhere on your road. The army raids into cities and villages that are involved in the joint struggle that I'm going to talk later, and villages and cities that are just over there. The Israelis have the ability and the power, and they're doing it, to go everywhere in Palestine. There is a false image today that there is a Palestinian leadership and things are much better. If the Israeli government make a choice, they'll go to Ramallah and arrest Abu Mazen because he's wanted for something. The president of the Palestinian Authority. And they do it. They do it for other people, maybe not for the politician at the moment, but they control how much to normalize this occupation. They want to have a Palestinian Authority that make things look better because it makes people to forget about all the control that is there all the time. So, if you come to Palestine as an international, as Israeli, you need to go a few steps. You need to cross the wall in some place, you need to go through checkpoints. It's not a free land to go for it. As Israelis, we're not allowed to go to many of these places. As internationals, you need to... It depends on the time and the person who gets you in the border, but you're allowed to go there and not to participate in political things, and a lot of things can be considered political. I'm going to show you a few minutes presentation, which is the first part, that shows what I just talked about. Shows the checkpoints, shows the queues, the lines every morning, the people, and every evening. So farmers waiting to approach their land to work. Shows the roadblocks. It's really important for me to start over there and then go to talk about the resistance and the joint struggle. Because even in an anarchy space, it's important to understand what's the reality over there. And as much as I want to show you what's happening there, the moment you get to the West Bank or to Gaza, you understand how bad it is and how much violation, what I consider and many others consider violence. And violence, as I said, is this kind of reality. It's a violence that's made by the state, by the Israeli authorities, and this is why there is resistance, as we're going to see later.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel, put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Occupied territories, Palestinian land, that there is a horrendous example of apartheid. The occupation of Palestinian land, the confiscation of that land that doesn't belong to Israel, the building of settlements on it, the colonization of that land, and then the connection of those isolated but multiple settlements, more than 200 of them, with each other by highways, on which Palestinians can't travel, and quite often where Palestinians cannot even cross. So the persecution of the Palestinians now under the occupied territories is under the occupation forces is one of the worst examples of human rights deprivation that I know in their own territory by the occupying powers, which is Israel. They've taken away all the basic human rights of the Palestinians, as was done in South Africa against the blacks. Meet me, meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in, my Lord. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Than a show usually. There's a movie I want to show, but I think we couldn't take this in for 20 minutes. It's a 20 minutes movie in such quality, we need to give up. But I'll show another presentation after it and some short movies. Before I continue this presentation and the next presentation, all this still photography you're going to see tonight are pictures made by a photography collective, mostly anarchists, called Active Stills. I'm a member of this collective. We document the Palestinian life, the Palestinian struggle for justice, and other social struggles inside Israel. Animal rights, workers' rights, refugees and asylum seekers from Africa. So there are other things that we document. We have around 11,000 pictures on Flickr these days, and we're migrating them into our website, so the website has a bit less. It's called Active Stills, and you're welcome to look at it. So, now when you have a bit of an image, what is the life in Palestine? What's the life in Palestine and how much a Palestinian life has been violated? You understand why there is resistance? There was always resistance in Palistine. There's a history of non-violent resistance and armed resistance. There are many ways that there was resistance in Palestine. But only in the early 2000s, it started to be a joint struggle. A joint struggle that has not only Palestinian participate in this struggle, also bigger amount of non-Palestinian. As a response to the Israeli decision to build a wall in 2002 and the beginning of the construction, the Palestinian Popular Committees in different areas decided to make a non-violent struggle which include demonstrations, direct action, everything they can to try and stop the construction of the wall or the fence, wherever it is built. A popular committee, it's a regional committee in a region or a village or a town that people are elected, but it's not they can be from different parties, but they don't have a political achievement. They don't try to be a mayor or in a political party. So this popular committee started the struggle. Few Israelis and some internationals started to join them. But the turning point was 2003 when an activist camp was made in the village of Masra. One of the villages has been affected by the construction of the wall, and the popular committee and the organizer of this camp called international Israeli activists to come for solidarity to join these daily direct actions and demonstrations. In Masra, it was anarchists against the wall started officially, or so-called officially. We're not an official organization, we're an anarchist group, or we started as an anarchist group that joining the Palestinian struggle. It's an answer to the call for solidarity. The name was chosen in a very funny way. This is what the media adopted, and then the group adopted it. But the nature of the founding group of people at that time were anarchists. There was a reason why anarchists been chosen, and till this day, at least, the nature of how the group works is around anarchism. Even though we're open to everybody that's willing to join the struggle and respect our Palestinian partners. So after a few months, 3 months I think, the camp was raided by the Israeli forces and many people were being arrested, many international being deported, and the construction actually went on over there, unfortunately, like many other places. But it was a turning point where there was more organized and joint struggle, where Israelis come to Palestinian villages when they are invited, when they're coming as Israelis that understand, or at least we hope that most of the people participating in them understand that we're coming from the privileged side. We're coming in Israelis, we are Israelis, we are the occupation, we are the oppressors, even though we go there hand by hand with Palestinians or going to do direct action, willing to pay the price of whatsoever, we know that we're Israelis. And it's very important to understand this point because most of the initiative till this moment in Israel and Palestine during the what's so-called peace movement or left, liberal left, most of them patronized the Palestinians, came and told them, we know what's good for you, we know what's the solution, we know how you should be, how can you be a good Palestinian? And when the anarchists started to join, when the joint struggle started, and till now, the main approach was, we're joining a Palestinian call. We don't go to any place that we are not welcomed. If there are popular committee or individuals invite us, we also check carefully that they are really representing the area. 5 people in one town of 7,000 people doesn't mean they represent more than 50 people. But if they invited us and we feel welcomed and we feel that the village really wants to go into the struggle, we join it. We try not to initiate anything that can cost a high cost from the Palestinians because it's their choice and they do the actions and they're there when it's ending, when we're going back to the Israeli side and being very safe. So this is the idea of how the joint struggle work. The focus on the joint struggle, I think, gained more attention from 2005. A village called Bilin attracted more Israelis than before. Many of you probably heard about this village. The struggle there, it's almost 6 years now. It started with direct actions and demonstration against the wall, and when the wall was completed, there is weekly demonstrations for already 6 years. The village of Bilin also was a door to people that are not as radical as the anarchists. We succeeded to attract the extreme side of the mainstream, or whatever you want to call them, some liberal left that when they came to believe, they opened their eyes a bit and understood that there are different realities, a different way to struggle. And it succeeded to gather more and more Israelis and to get more attention from the media. And the relationship we created with this village and other villages later, it's what makes the struggle ongoing. It makes this kind of struggle in some way successful. It might not be successful in the way we stop the wall, because the wall is being built. The Israeli forces are pretty strong, and we are not that many. But by succeeding to go on for so many years, even in times where it's so looking almost pathetic, because you can't be in a place where there's 15 demonstrators going to a demonstration, and they're like, three soldiers for every person there, and you ask yourself, what the hell I'm doing here? But there's always, every struggle have waves. There's a wave when you have hundreds of people come on demonstrations, there's the days where you'll be three Israelis and three Palestinians and 70 soldiers. But because we created this relationship and we work together, we can still communicate, first of all, with the Palestinians and create relationships that are more than just activists together, also friendship. And we succeed to continue with, at the moment, four villages. Bilin, as I mentioned, Ma'asra, who joined a year or two later near the town of Bethlehem, Ni'alin, which is a neighbor of Bilin, more or less, and Nebi Salah in the last year. The nature of the demonstration is very violent, not because of the demonstrations, because of what the army decided to do. The level of the violence is totally controlled by what the army decided to do these days. Almost in every demonstration you have these days in Palestine, you'll be confronted either by sound grenades and tear gas in the good case, or snipers in the bad case. The 23 casualties already in the struggle, all of them Palestinians, because it's easier for soldiers to shoot a Palestinian. The investigation will be probably either dismissing him or give him a small fine. In the worst case, he might be a few days in jail. And usually the system supports him so much. The recent casualty was almost 3 weeks ago, Jawar Abu Ahmad. Jawar Abu Ahmad is a woman from the village of Bilin. She died from intoxication of tear gas. The tear gas that Israel used, it's a CS gas, and it's prohibited by the European Union for 30 years in Europe by the countries before the European Union. This gas comes from a factory in Pennsylvania, I think. It's an American product, part of the American support to Israel, like many other things in the Israeli army. And it's very important to understand that without the American support, nothing like this can work. Because nobody else, we don't think that if America stops support, China will jump. It's obviously an American interest to have Israel so strong over there. After Jawar was killed or murdered by this tear gas, the Israeli army came with different excuses. First of all, they said she wasn't there. And then when they couldn't prove she wasn't there, they said she died from cancer. And then when she couldn't prove she died from cancer, they tried to prove something else. The new thing I heard today, they're blaming the hospital for treating her badly. So a Palestinian hospital, they can't get too much funds and access to good medical supplies because of Israel restrictions, is to be blamed of giving bad treatment for a Palestinian woman who's been hurt by the Israeli army. This is the new excuse. People were there, she inhaled a lot of tear gas, and been proven by research, this tear gas can be very lethal. I know for many years during demonstration, we really wonder what is the effect of this tear gas, how badly it is. We have kind of even joked about it sometimes, because you need some humor in your struggle, otherwise you get too serious. And all these olive trees that getting it, and we said it's all organic, excluding the tear gas. And the thing is that we learn in the tragic way what is real. This thing can kill like any other weapons that the army use. They use what's so-called non-lethal weapons in a lethal way. They take tear gas canisters, they're supposed to be shot from 1,200 feet to 1,500 feet and shoot it from less than 100 feet. Yeah, you have activists from the Bay Area that got hit, and the army denied till today. They say they didn't know that anybody is there. Tristan Anderson got hit because the army chose to shoot into a place where there's a crowd with something that's supposed to break barricades and drywalls, not something that's supposed to be shoot into a crowd. This tear gas canister is silent. You don't see it. I came back few weeks after he was injured, and I never been exposed to it before. In one of the demonstrations, we see it, we don't see the army, they're far away, we kind of like fought in a safe place. Suddenly this thing jumped and hit my shoe and continued for like several dozen feet. This is a crazy weapon, they don't use it for a long time because somebody died in Bilin from it. Bassem Abu Ahmad, the brother of the woman who died 3 weeks ago, he died almost 2 years ago. They didn't use it for a while, they brought it back a few months ago. It's illegal according to the general attorney, they used it in Nebi Salah. And they stopped. But they stopped using it because the media put it out. Fortunately, we have around half a journalist that support us, that succeed to pull things out. The thing is, with all these lethal weapons, they're illegal in the army. You're not supposed to use this thing. But they use it because the commanders on the ground know that nobody check, nobody cares about it, nobody cares about that dead Palestinians. Hardly nobody cares about an American person get injured. The other lethal weapons they use, as I said earlier, they are snipers. Small caliber live ammunition, caliber of 22 millimeters. Yeah, this thing is maybe non-lethal if you don't shoot it to somebody's head, if you don't shoot it to the back of somebody, if you don't shoot it to the chest of somebody. In the village of Nialin, which I was involved in the last almost 3 years, 3 people died from it. And they died from it because a sniper intentionally shot into lethal areas. One person got shot in the back of the head, one in the front of the head, one shot in the chest. And I was there. The moment that this demonstration, I think June 2009, it was the craziest demonstration. You don't think you get into this kind of reality. You go to a struggle, you think you march to soldiers, maybe they shoot tear gas, maybe some sound grenade, and suddenly you find yourself in an urban fighting. All these things that you enjoy playing on your PlayStation, now these kids that enjoy to play it on the PlayStation have real guns, 18, 19 years old, running into a village and doing whatever they want. And when we succeed to go near the soldier, we can hear them talk, and like, you know, they're exactly the same kind of discourse that you have between gamers is between these soldiers to each other. Go and hit this fucker in the window. I want to see somebody dead today. I want to see a funeral tomorrow. These are real comments of things we document in videos. We have a commander of the border police saying, shoot somebody, I want a funeral tomorrow. And this is where you go. And suddenly you go to one demonstration, and after there's this machine, you're going to see something look like a rain of tear gas. Some people might think it's a white phosphorus that's been used in Gaza, but it's tear gas. It's 54 tear gas canister shot in the middle of village. Not once, not twice, 3 times, 4 times. And after they shoot the tear gas, they brought the snipers. And you hear a sniper. After a while in the demonstration, you can recognize different noises. And you're a sniper. 2 seconds later, a call for a medic and the ambulance. And add another 15 minutes, again and again. And this is a demonstration that we had 5 people being shot by snipers. And the last one went to help a guy who got shot in the stomach and lost his consciousness because he got stuck in his spine. And when he came to help him, the sniper shot him in the chest and killed him. Akel died, tried to assist another 17-year-old boy that lost his consciousness. When I came to pick up the boy, I didn't know the other guy was already dead. We didn't know he was hit. And we're carrying him to the ambulance, and we get there, and somebody said, another person was shot, and we really was disorientated of what's happening. And you get home, and it's in your, inside you, it never goes out. It's something that the Palestinians experience much more than us. They experience it, especially in the aliens, especially in the villages that join the struggle, sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes on a night basis, sometimes it will be a whole week. And the resistance over there is the only way they can do it. They choose not to do an armed struggle. You talk with the people and they tell you, we don't want to do an armed struggle, you know what's the price. We already have people dying now, but the moment you pick a gun, many more people will die. And as much as we're joining the non-violent struggle, we'll stand there with stone throwers, because the presence of Israelis and internationals used to be a de-escalation for the army, not anymore. Obviously, you heard about the casualties. But it's not only about de-escalation, about solidarity. We're in solidarity with every Palestinian in a village, and the villages also we're not participating. These people will protect us. If I'm injured and the army coming, the stone throwers will go there and try to make the army not arrive. So for me, to stand with them when they're being attacked, is the little I can do to show solidarity. So I'm going to show another presentation now about the joint struggle. What you're going to see here is a lot of demonstrations. It's direct action when we open road blocks. We'll see concrete blocks being moved. You'll see people blocking roads, roads that are only for Israelis on a Palestinian land. You'll see a big pink thing, which we're going to show a movie later. And you're going to see some actions, demonstrations inside Israel, because we don't stop in Palestine. We try to create some kind of resistance inside Israel, but it's a different play, game. I think I'll show it.
This is one of the most important moments in the life of our country. I stand before you filled with deep pride and joy. Pride in the ordinary, humble people of this country. You have shown such a calm, patient determination to reclaim this country as your own. From the rooftops, free At luck.
Just to clear about the sticker, even though it's Nelson Mandela and it's referring to South Africa, and it was a kind of a nice speech to choose because it's referring... The reality has a lot of similarities and differences between Israel and Palestine. The discourse about the similarities and differences are much bigger when the Zionists try to protect what they do in Palestine. The reality is there is a majority that's occupying a land for many years and oppressing the minority. And I know in a space like this I don't need to explain about it too much, but other places have been asked, how can you compare it to apartheid? Apartheid was there's a race law, the white had laws for white and then they have a race system. I prefer to have apartheid when I know everything is clear and there are laws and people are proud of the racism than have the system of Israel, the Zionist education, the Zionist propaganda that try to hide and try to pretend we are liberals, we're doing it because this is needs of security. Try to hide and when they go to the world and say, we're okay, it just we have to do it now. We're in a peace process. We're in a peace process for 20 years now, and the situation just getting worse all the time. I usually, after this part, I show a movie that I made. I said I'm not going to show it tonight because it will be very painful for the eyes to watch it in such conditions. But I'll try... I don't want to try. I'm going to say what the movie is about and why I play it, even though I don't show it. I interview my friend in Said in Yalin. It's one of the stone forts. He's a 19 years old boy. It took me many years. Only after 2 years we start to get close. There was a process when you start to go to demonstrations. Many times you work with the older people. You know the Shabab, you respect them, they respect you, but there's not much of a relationship in many villages. Some villages, Shabab is the young people in the village. Yeah, it's a young man. And there's the one that's showing resistance and confronts the army. There's the ones that go and throw stones. There's the ones that participate in many of the direct actions. In the village of Nialin, we succeeded to cut the fence. As you saw in one of the pictures, we succeeded to tear down a 5-ton concrete block, which is almost 20 feet high, with different tools. This village suffered from most of the repression in the last few years. And when I joined the struggle, as hippie as I'm going to sound in a second, my point of view was Palestinians usually see and know Israelis as soldiers, as oppressors. If I go to Palestine and make one kid to see Israelis in a different point of view, for me it's a difference. This is achievement, this is a success. If there's other successes, like tearing down the wall, like creating ongoing struggle, it's beneficial for the first thing. It's actually easier to tear down the walls and to change a Palestinian view. It's easier to go to demonstrations every week and so then go back to Israel and have no relationship with the Palestinians. In Yalin, we created, these ongoing groups that going there for many years, and we created a small group that continue going there, even though the demonstrations are very depressive. Because these days, you walk to a concrete wall, you yell on a concrete wall, you throw stones on a concrete wall if you're Palestinian, and you get tear gas and rubber bullets from the other side, and you go back home. This is what you do, because the Israeli army can stop everything you do, and this is the only thing that left. But for the people that lose their land in Yalin, this weekly actions or weekly demonstration what keeps them alive in a way, or with some reason to stay over there and not to get fully depressed or to give up. So my friend Said, that only in the last few months we got close, he got into more relationship with internationals and Israelis because his father was arrested as part of the organizers of the demonstration, one of the members of the popular committee in the village. He was convicted for participating in illegal demonstrations and organizing illegal demonstrations. You can't get a permit as a Palestinian to organize the demonstrations. There's not such a thing in the Israeli law. It's an occupied land, they declare it as a closed military zone, it's the end of the game. The Palestinians and us, we confront this idea of not having illegal demonstrations. We're going there and we don't care about this declaration when you get there or in advance. And obviously it's an occupied land, like the oppressor can give any laws to make more oppression over there. As the organizer of the popular struggle in the village of Belin, for example, one of the organizers was convicted for the same thing, but he also was convicted for illegal possession of arms. Why? In his house, Abdallah Abu Rahma, where the demonstration started and where there's a small museum to talk about the struggle, collected weapons that were used against the demonstration. So he had used tear gas canisters of different kinds, he had rubber bullets, maybe some live ammunition that was shot. So he just exhibited to people that come to the village. So this is considered by the Israeli military code illegal possession of arms. So whatever been shot on you, you're not allowed to touch, because then it's illegal possession of arms that can't be used again. But you need to understand how much the system is racist and oppressive, because as a Palestinian, there is no voice. And I wish there was a Palestinian with me. I wish Saeed was here with me, not only because a friend, because I think he's a great person, because I think this is a Palestinian struggle that I'm joining, and it's his struggle, and I'm just a guest in a way. But for Saeed to come here and talk would be almost an impossible mission. He lives in a village that has resistance. Most of the people in this village, or many people, especially the people that either being arrested by the army like him or being part of the struggle, need a permit to go to Israel. In Jerusalem, this was the American consulate where they need to apply for a visa. So if he wants to go to the US, he needs illegally to cross to Jerusalem, apply to a visa, and because he was arrested for a non-violent struggle, might be portrayed as an American administration as a terrorist. So the chances for him to come here and talk are very low. And I wish I could have him here. I wish I could show you the movie, but he's a very good speaker, and we created very good friendship. It's something that I didn't expect, accepted, it came very quickly, and somehow I got myself into the village not during demonstration in the last few months before I came here. I visited Saeed, we had different conversations, I tried to help him with a few things as a media coordinator of the village, and we had different talks, and some of them normal talks with friends, and most of them about the struggle, about how he sees the struggle and how I see the struggle. And one of the times that I got there, I got at night and he invited me to sleep in a Palestinian village. For me as Israeli, who joined the struggle with all the fears that you are raised up as an Israeli, with all the prejudice, with all the propaganda that's around you, it's a big step. Tell you that I wasn't afraid, even though I know most of the village know me, I was afraid. This village, the leaders are not part of the Fatah party, are part of the Hamas party. I don't know if somebody decide now to take me as whatever. But very easily I dismissed his fears when I got there. I understood. I walked in the streets with him. There was a wedding, and half of the village knew my name, or many of the people knew my name. Like, hey, how are you doing? We're really happy you're here. Like, what are you doing here? Like, and they made me dance in a Palestinian wedding. It was horrible dancing. I looked like the worst thing ever, but they wanted me to do it, and like, I did it. I hardly danced in any other occasion, but the feeling of being really welcomed was something that made me really happy. It made me to understand that after such long time in the struggle, not as others, but for me, almost 4 years, I actually created a really real relationship beyond this running away from tear gas canister, beyond the rubber bullets, beyond the injuries that I had or the other people had. And maybe a statement that Saeed made was a thing that it sounds like I made it up, but it's really, and it's almost word to what he said. We're sitting there, he's dealing with emails, and he tells me, you know, I'm dealing with emails, I'm dealing with internationals, and there's something really strange and wrong. There are these internationals that come here or talk with me on Skype or through the email, the only things they care about or the only things out there, anti-Jews or anti-Israel, and they don't really care about Palestinians. And he said to me, this is totally wrong. He tells them that the struggle is not against Jews and it's not against Israel, it's against the occupation and against any occupation or oppression in the world. And this is what he said the people in Ni'alin believe in. So it's very romantic, and obviously not all the people in Ni'alin believe in it. But to hear at least Said saying it, a 19 years old boy, he lost very two good friends in the struggle that had been killed by Israeli snipers, and to come to a, in a way, very good political point of view, people that tell, a person also tells to me, he tried to organize in the village now when his father in jail, how the people that lost their working permit will get money. He said, if I get paid for any media work, I'm going to give it to the families that lost their jobs because of the war. I don't going to benefit anything from the struggle. This is not obvious in anywhere you go in the world. There's so many people in struggle that try to get this achievement. But to have a friendship with somebody like this, even if it's not, if he commenting or quoting things he read before, it's a big thing for me. And I think not all of us, obviously, but many of us created this friendship in different places in the struggle. Or at least relationship was mutual respect. A place where there is a way to confront this racist system that try to separate you by any means they have. By walls, by laws, by the education, by the media. A place where a Palestinian and an Arab is either your enemy or is a non-human person. And this was, this is the last time I was in Israel, it was in November. This is when I came to the US. And it's really... It really motivated me to come to the tour. I did a tour like this before, took all my energies, and to come out to know that I'm somehow, hopefully, can represent the struggle in a way that to show that it's first of all resistant and there some glimpse of hope somewhere. It's something that's also part of the struggle. Because we're not showing the movie. I'm going to slightly change the subject and talk about another repression that go in the last few years, and especially in the last few months in Israel. And maybe also a bit of, outside of this, maybe some other things. The group decided, I think I said in the beginning, to provide legal support to any Palestinian that is part of the joint struggle that ask us for support. It means that we'll pay for a lawyer or do whatever we can that the Palestinians will get the highest chances in court. As a Palestinian, to be in a military court, you have very low chances to find non-guilty. Especially if you're a Palestinian lawyer that the military court see as the enemy. When you have an Israeli Jewish lawyer, a woman, which is our lawyer, Gabi Lasky, you have higher chances. First, because she's an amazing lawyer. Second, because she's a white woman in a racist system, and Jewish. And it's a difference. This is how the racist system works. And she's one of the only lawyers that succeeded to make people, to get people non-guilty. So we took upon ourselves to support this Palestinian friend. And this brought a lot of cases that cost us a lot of money. This is why we're doing the fundraising, to pay this for these cases. So our poor lawyer get money every few months because we can't even pay our expenses. The other thing is that the Israeli authorities, by coincidence or not, around a year and a half, 2 years ago, started to put charges against us that were on hold for a really long time. So suddenly you get like a call to court for four cases, four illegal demonstrations, blocking roads. Nothing really serious. There's nothing that we've done that's been charged against doesn't include the property damage or anything else. But they want to kind of flood our system team that will have a lot of cases. So a lot of people are facing a lot of legal prosecutions these days. One of members of Anarchists Against the Wall, pretty well-known person because he worked with the media, went to jail a week ago. He's not the first one to go to jail, but the first one that going to jail for a bike ride, critical mass. It's like here, you bike slowly on a main road, protesting something. So he protests the war in Gaza, And they actually aimed on him. He has the nature of looking like a leader, an organizer, a charismatic person. His name is Jonathan Pollack. And he was well known to the authorities, and they thought he's organizing it. So from all the 30 people that were there, the detectives came and arrested him and nobody else. Even though the nature of a critical mass is no leader, especially an anarchist critical mass. And because he had a pending... He was convicted for another demonstration, and he was on probation. So not only because of probation, but because of other reasons, he refused to pay a fine or do community service because he believes that paying the fine or doing the community service is compromising and working with the system. So he went to jail for 3 months. There is a address in the back, if you want to send letters. Jonathan is a very asocial person. He's friendly to around 5 people, maybe 10 around the world. He's a good friend of mine, and he's proud of this kind of social relationship. But he sent a request for letters, so believe me, it's a big step social for him, and he'll really appreciate letters. It's really, before the problematic asocial behavior, he's a great organizer, he's a real dedicated in the struggle and many other anarchist struggles for many years. He's an animal rights activist, and he is willing to pay the price now that maybe many of us will need to pay later. We don't know if it's a moment when things are worse or it's going to get worse. We know that the current government sounds much more radical than others. It doesn't mean they are more radical. The nature of governments is to be radical against activists. So I can't tell you if it's getting worse, but the discourse of the government is much worse. You have a proposition or to do inquiry into the funding of...
It has been laid before Israeli parliament. It's a bill.
It's a bill in the Israeli parliament to investigate into the funds of the human rights organizations in Israel. What that means, that groups like B'Tselem, which monitor violation of human rights in the Palestinian territories for more than 20 years, need to tell where the money comes from. All the left-wing organizations, breaking the silence, veterans that bring testimonies of soldiers anonymously about things that happen in different situations in the world, in the West Bank and Gaza, and actually exposing war crimes by the army, need to prove where the money comes from. Physicians for Human Rights need to prove where the money comes from. The government doesn't look where the right-wing organization gets the money from, or the settlers. You know where they're getting a lot of the money from? Evangelist churches. Evangelist churches that want the Jews to fight the Armageddon war against the Muslims and to bring salvation to the Holy Land and the world. So the way to do it is support settlers! Yay! A lot of the politicians on the right-wing parties get their money from the same donation as the settlers get it. The repression, or at least the discourse of repression, getting worse inside Israel. It's including things that might have been underground for many time, but things that were racist and almost illegal 20 years ago becoming now a very loud voices. 300 rabbis, including people that are rabbis that are paid by the Israeli government, signed a petition to tell people you shouldn't sell or rent houses for Arabs. A week later, a rabbi's wife petitioned, a letter as they call it in Israel, followed by demonstrations saying, protect the Jewish girls, your Jewish daughters, don't let them date non-Jews. Same time, we have demonstrations against asylum seekers and refugees from Africa, worker migrants that are destroying our environment. And this is, it's a, such a typical incident in a very racist society. You have it everywhere in the world. You have it in Arizona, and you have it in Europe, and you have it every place. You blame the other. You blame the other, the person over there, for your faults. And it's exactly what they're doing in Israel. About not accepting anybody outside of the Jewish community. The attempt to make this country more and more Jewish, to I call it Jewish gentrification, so it's Jewification of different places. I know it sounds anti-Semitic in a way, but it's almost an official policy of the government. You have the East Jerusalem neighborhoods that for years are Palestinian. Some of them are refugees from 48. Some of them are being displaced already twice. There was a status quo for many years that East Jerusalem, even if we not acknowledge it, is Palestinian, so we do two things. First of all, even though we control it, we don't give any budget, and it's getting very bad infrastructure and education system. But on the other hand, and we don't put many Israeli settlers over there, but it's still Israeli, and we should unify Jerusalem. So for many years, it was a status quo. In the last 10, 15 years, more Jews were moving. And since the Cohen mayor that's been elected 2 years ago, it's much, much more radical. The guy is supporting the right for Jews to live everywhere. It's a colonialist approach. He sent settlers, or he approving settlers, to live inside Palestinian communities. They go to houses in Sheikh Jarrah, for example, a place where there is an ongoing struggle for more than a year. You take Jewish people, you put them in houses, and they say it was a Jewish property before 1948. The Supreme Court approves their claim in the court, so they go back to houses that belonged to Jewish before 48. What about all the Palestinians that lost their houses before 48? You have 400 Palestinians that lost their properties in 48, or much, depending on the numbers, it can be more or less. There's a whole discussion about it. But there's a lot of Palestinians in this village, in this neighborhood, that have been displaced in 48. If they go to court and claim their house back in Western Jerusalem, where all the bourgeois, high-class people live, they won't get anything. They won't even succeed to go into court. They will be dismissed before probably a discussion in court. And it's really important to understand this is where things are going these days. Things that a few years ago people were afraid to talk about. But when you have a parliament, when more than 50% come from inside the settlers movement, then more than 80%. I'm going to show you two movies of one old action and one recent action. It's very important to understand where the anarchist against the wall came from, what was the anarchist community before in Israel. Before Anarchists Against the Wall, there was a group of radical queer called Black Sheep, and I think a lot of them were anarchists.
Black Laundry.
I call them Black Sheep. because in Hebrew it sounds the same.
It's the same word.
It's the same word, just different.
It's a homonym. Language different. Same sound. Different.
Yeah. A good friend and a member of Black Laundry, and he's and he's also the black sheep. So, sorry for the stretching. I need to show some ability. Anyway, the queer presence in the movement, at least in the first part of the 20s, was very strong. There is still a very strong queer community in Israel, but it's not as organized as it was at Black Laundry. There are a lot of events. The presence of the queer people inside the group is very strong, involving other things that's happening in the small anarchist community. And also the beginning of the recent anarchist kind of movement, which is early 90s, is including a lot of hardcore punk vegan people that evolved into queer politics later, and also some other independent anarchists. We have Israeli in the media, for example, but it's not as active as other places.
I'm going to start passing this around. This is for the legal defense.
So, yeah. And it's very important because the first movie you're going to see was initiated by the queer anarchists in Israel. Some of you might saw it 2 years ago. I can't remember if I screened it here. I apologize if you already saw it. But it's such a fun movie that I'm going to show it again. And the second one, which will just follow it with no explanation, it's something that's been done recently. recently. If for some reason people write checks, this is my manager and boss. And don't write a check for Anarchists Against the Wall. It's been done in other places. We don't have a bank account, and it might be useless. But yeah, we'll show these two movies, and we hope the pink one.
You want to go? You have a hold?
I'm not sure if it's a good time. I'm not sure if it's a stop the movie.
It ain't us, it's Arizona. Apartheid for them, you pamphlet, and I just go on with the show. Boycott apartheid, boycott apartheid, that's what they say, no.
I'm going to my water room. It's been a bit stressful tonight. So. We're going to have Q&A. I don't know if somebody wanted to make an announcement before the Q&A. Is there was some kind of announcement wanted to be made? No?
Oh, you can announce the protest.
Yeah, you want to announce it on me?
I can do it. Hello. So we're going to have a demonstration. There are several events happening with Tristan Anderson from Oakland, who was wounded in March of 2009 and shot in Lynn at a demonstration. There have been demonstrations, but not with Tristan. Tristan was in the hospital for a very long time and transitioned out of the hospital and back into the world and back to the Bay Area this summer. This coming March marks 2 years since the day he was shot. And we're going to have a demonstration this time with Tristan in the street as well. So we hope to have a very big turnout. The date that he was shot also comes very closely around the time that Rachel Corrie was killed. And obviously there have been many, many people who have been killed, wounded, and had their lives really ripped to shreds by participating in the struggle and having the courage to be a part of this struggle, which is so important. But the demonstration, and there'll be more information coming out, we're still in the process of organizing, but it should be really excellent, and we're going to be doing this on Monday, March 14th is the tentative date. So Monday, March 14th at the Israeli consulate, and there'll be more info and checking eBay, and my name's Gabby, you can talk to me. Monday, March 14th. And also, right here in the neighborhood, there's going to be a closing party for Tristan's art show. Tristan, I don't know if anybody knows, but Tristan has an art show up right now, actually at Balazzo Submission Gallery. And on the 30th, Sunday the 30th, we'll be having a closing party, and there should be performers and stuff. It should be pretty cool, and some food in the afternoon on the 30th. But we're really hoping to have a big turnout for March 14th, Monday, March 14th, to disrupt business at the consulate.
All right, cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we're going to have a big fucking birthday party for him in February. Yeah.
Where?
Two-house party, Mardi Gras party, at Purple House in Hillary. February 5th. Saturday, February 5th. Yeah, it's been really great. It should be like circuit and stuff like that.
I have no way to know the time. I can see now the time behind the curtain. Okay, now it's around 8:40. And I usually give around half an hour of Q&A. And I'm happy to do more if we feel there's a discussion. And so we can start with the Q&A. I don't know if somebody wants to facilitate. I can facilitate. in case I miss somebody and you see that you're raising your hand and I didn't see you, just raise it higher. and I'll probably see you, but I'm tending not to miss people. I hope you find it a bit informative. I hope you enjoyed some part of it as much as joyful such thing can be. And for the donation, if any one of you don't feel that they have the money, please, it's okay not to donate. Don't feel any stress of putting money there. So I think we can start.
Yeah, I was wondering if, there's Israeli-only roads in the West Bank, and, Palestinians have to get permits, there's the roadblocks and so forth, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the specifics of the other way around, where and when it's illegal for Israelis and internationals to be traveling in certain parts of the West Bank, closed military zones, the differences between internationals and Israelis.
So first of all, for Israelis, according to the peace process in the 90s, the Palestinian land was divided into area A, B, and C. A is full Palestinian control, B is Israeli security control and Palestinian administration, and C is full Israeli control, but the Palestinian land. Area A's are closed to Israelis, are illegal to go there by the army administration. There's a warrant by the brigadier of the West Bank. Area A is mostly the urban areas, Jenin, Nablus, Ramallah, Hebron, and the surrounding villages. There can be individual warrants by local officers that prevent people to go. This is a general order where you can't go. I don't know the English ranks, but an officer, which is not like a basic officer, but around, not a brigadier, but like a level underneath it, can decide that the area is a closed military zone where nobody can go except of the Palestinians that own a specific land. Closed military zone need to be shown to you with a map and a signature of this officer. Otherwise, you can claim that it's illegal. It's not going to help you a lot because the soldier is going to arrest you and kick you out, and later you can claim that like, it was illegal war, and it's like, okay, whatever, go home. We don't care about you. There are a system of checkpoints, so you can be prevented of crossing some point because the soldiers have intelligence or they like ask you where to go and decide that you can't be there. And they're allowed to detain you up to 4 hours if you're under four people and up to 8 hours if you're more than four people. And this is detained on the spot, not moving you anywhere. As international, you actually can go everywhere in the West Bank. There is no limit. Not allowed to participate in any political events. And they can actually individually tell you, you got a visa to Israel, but you prohibited from going to the West Bank. It's not been used that many times, but we know people that got this kind of a visa. The thing is that what is political, it's all up to the Israeli authorities to decide what is political. So the international, going and living in a village and not involved in the struggle, but you're not actually participating in the demonstration, can consider illegal or threat by the Israeli authorities. So with the international, it's not that complicated to get to these places. You are under the threat of deportation if you're arrested, and you're under a very minor threat to actually being denied entry to Israel and then obviously to the West Bank. It depends on your history, it depends on what you're involved with, and depends which country you come with. Apparently the Swedish and the Israeli government are very good friends, and a lot of Swedish activists couldn't come in, even though they came from, not from a pro-Palestinian background, came from an anarchist or environmental justice issue. But because they've been arrested, the Israeli authorities knew about all the arrests, all the records, when they entered the country, they asked them about it. But generally, it's not that hard to get in, but you need to know where to be and to be careful of how much they look after you. It all depends how outgoing you are of what you're doing.
people should become educated if they want to come over. It behooves them to...
Sorry?
People, foreign, international people who want to come into Israel, Palestine, should educate themselves in the best case scenario before they arrive to know all the things before they come, because they can get shit in the border.
Yeah.
No matter what they do. People who are completely apolitical get shit in the border. So if you want to come over, you should educate yourself with the localized.
Which is a, you should educate with people that have been there and that are here, because if you contact the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine, there are big chances they're following the...
Totally.
They follow the emails. So the moment you email them or contact on Facebook, they can find out about you. So it's the best thing is to contact people you know who've been there, that will give you a good advice of how to get there. Cool.
Are there any Jewish organizations in the United States that are organizing around anti-apartheid activities that we can join with?
There are two organizations that I can feel comfortable suggesting what they're doing. One is Jewish Voices for Peace. They give a freedom for the people inside to have individual thoughts. They want people to organize, and they say for justice for Palestinians against the occupation. They said they're open for non-Zionists, they're open for people that are going for boycott and BDS. And this is a regional chapter here. They're actually been sponsoring this tour in many places. So if they're sponsoring the anarchists, you can understand that they have pretty much a good point of view, at least some people. And I think it's important that more people that are anarchists and radical will join this organization. There is a Anti-Zionist International League, or you... Sorry?
IJAN.
Is it international?
It's like International Jewish Anti-Zionist.
Yeah,
Network.
International Jewish Anti-Zionist. What?
Network.
Sorry. There are too many letters, I forget. And I heard a lot about them, and I know they're organized, but they're a small organization. So. There is a Bay chapter, and there is people in Twin City and all doing stuff. I know one of the people there personally. And I think it's important, not because they care much about Jewish identity or Jewish superiority or whatsoever. I just think the Jewish community are the ones that make most pressure on Israel when it comes to being somebody that can pressure the government from outside. And not that I'm denying my Jewish identity, but... and the Israeli government actually trying to delegitimize of these groups because they feel threat. So these are the two groups that I more or less know about. There might be more.
Can you tell us about the experience of being an anarchist in Israel and the community that you have and what it's like to be in a country where... I'm just curious what it's like with your friends. I mean, what's your lifestyle like? And you are people very critical of you? Do people serve in the military? That's one question. And then another question is, what is it like? How do you grapple with like the complexity of supporting like the Palestinian movement when it's a nationalist movement and you consider yourself anarchist?
The second question was the common one I get in anarchist spaces, and I'll answer it first, and then I'll go to life as an anarchist in Israel, put something under this title. But I think what we do, and we understand that we're joining a movement that is mostly nationalist, most of us fight first for justice and try to get equality and understand that the outcome might be something that we disagree with. And obviously in a traditional society like Palestine, there are many things that many of us are not happy with, as many other communities around the world. I think it's, as a oppressor side, as a privileged side, come and stop my solidarity with the Palestinians that I do, because my belief is that there's a utopian anarchist solution in the end. It's kind of patronizing people that are really oppressed. It's patronizing the people that are oppressed on much higher levels than I am. And the solidarity act that I do is, for me, maybe compromising on some of my anarchist views, but are more important in this moment. I don't say I don't look for a non-state solution. I don't say the nationalist movement in Palestine doesn't lack the nationalist discourse that other nationalist movements had or have. I just think that from the place where we come and the responsibilities that we take as people that grew up in Israel, as in Israelis, and also as anarchists, it's really important to go and show solidarity. And this is a way you fight for human rights and you fight for equality. And the solution is such a vague thing that might happen in the future that maybe over there I'll disconnect myself. But to actually create a reality where the community is a basic of mutual relationships is joining the joint struggle, because we're breaking the so obvious nationalist definition of the so-called Holy Land. The Jews and the Palestinians, we're creating a community that fighting at that moment against Israeli occupation. But if I succeed to change or to work with some people in this community for a bigger Israeli-Palestinian anarchist community one day, it's only by outreaching and joining this grassroots movement, and not by dismissing myself from that movement, not by not participate because there are many things I disagree with. I mostly disagree with myself, you know, living in a upper class gentrified area in Tel Aviv, but I live there because this is more comfortable at the moment. The space in Israel, this is for your first question, the space in Israel is, as I said, that small. And the community is this close to each other, and the area we hang out is also very small. It's surrounding mostly Tel Aviv. There's some rare events and part of the community in Jerusalem. And we have an info shop and a vegan bar that are neighbors. And most of the stuff that is officially anarchist or led by anarchists that care about saying that they're anarchists go from there. So it can be like vegan brunch on Fridays, it can be political events. It can be music shows, and unfortunately our community become like most of the people in the community don't want to talk with people outside the community because you just go crazy. Like, you can't tolerate the mainstream Zionist or mainstream Israeli thoughts. That first of all, as an anarchist, it's crazy. Second of all, for people that have never been in the West Bank and think they know what's happening there. And the third thing is that you actually feel threatened many times because you're the ones that are willing to make a discussion about things, but because of your radical point of view or extreme point of view, or for me it's like a normal point of view, you've been attacked by the Israeli. And for the army, we have members that were in the army. I was in the army, part of the personal process to become an anarchist. Went through the army. I don't dismiss what I do. I didn't participate in conflicts, even though I was combatant. It was before the Second Intifada, so my political views were, and the anarchist community was very, very small and very exclusive. You know, it was very hard to go in. And I didn't know much about anarchism, but through my process, I went through the army and other political movements in Israel that are more part of the system, more part of the political game. And I thought I can change from inside, like some of us. It's not like one, two, a few of us, especially in my age. I think people that are younger than me, I'm early 30s, people that are younger than me already had the Second Intifada, already saw the highest crimes that were made by the state. Just look at the death rate that, in Palestine, or the roadblocks, or the whole system, or the wars. And actually, after 2000, it's made things much clearer about how Israel acts in Palestine. But we don't dismiss people that were in these places because it's important to change the people that are not close to you. It's important to change the people that have a small but very important understanding of what you have and try to expand this kind of understanding. We try to do different outreaching. Obviously, some of the community don't care about it, and some of us do care about it. It's very complicated. I tell you the truth, I left Israel. Not because of the reality, because of romantic reasons, which is brought me to this country. And at the moment I'm here. But I felt that the community is also very supportive in many ways, and creating a very strong community that if all the miscommunications that you have in many communities because of the intense reality in Israel and Palestine, you have really good support system with each other and a lot of understanding that I want to have with many people outside of Israel, because this intense thing of going every week to a demonstration and going such crazy reality and violence, it's something that one needs to go through to really support each other, I think. Like, it's not everybody, there are good supporters outside, but it's something that bonds the community in many ways.
I wondered how about women in the movement, and to what extent women, specifically Palestinian women, are leaders, how that colors.
This is the hardest part of the struggle for me and for many others. There's so many places, because of the traditional or conservative or religious places that we go, that women either don't take a part at all or just have a very minor part. And I think it's one of the hardest things for many of us to compromise on in a way. There are villages, every village has different environments. There are villages that are women-led demonstrations, there are women that are present in the resistance, and these villages are usually the place where you feel activists feel more welcomed and more kind of, not more welcome, but feel more comfortable. I can tell you for myself, as a boy and as a guy, I actually, it took me a long time to understand where I am and how oppressive it is, and where I participated. Maybe also because there was a strong ISM, International Solidarity Movement house that was mostly girls, women, and so I kind of told myself, okay, they're active during the week with the women, and they participate in demonstrations, and somehow because they became inside my kind of view, I said, oh, there are women in the, and it takes you a while to say, well, there's actually no Palestinian women in this village, only internationals or Israelis. I hope, and I might be super naive at the moment, that the presence of women from other communities in some places might start something, some place for more women, Palestinian women in the struggle. There are places, as I said, that the women in the struggle are very strong. There is the image of a Palestinian woman because of previous women that participate in the armed struggle. There is this harrowing thing about the women that fight against Israeli. And there is also, it's a very sexist, chauvinist statement, but you hear it many places in Palestine, that many men tell you, without the women, without the wives, that support them so much at home, they won't be able to go out. I know it sounds horrible in a way, but when you talk with Palestinian women many times, and you do approach them, you also get to understand that there are some things, maybe because they didn't go out of the oppression, that's saying, we're doing this by choice. The things that we want to participate and the things we don't want to participate. For them to be beaten up by an Israeli soldier is much more humiliating as a woman and much more oppressive than me being beaten up or a Palestinian man. Or, you want to say something? Okay, so just let me finish the sentence and then Ishai will add something. Another refugee from the anarchist community in Israel. So it's very hard, you know. I don't want to sound defensive, but I don't want to totally dismiss. Changes can go very slow, but sometimes they go faster, and I hope they'll go faster in this community. Unfortunately, like many places in the world, the fundamental religious side of the society getting stronger. But this fundamental religious side doesn't want to join Israelis anyway, so where we are might create some change.
Hi, I'm sorry, my name is Ishai. I wanted to address this question because I feel like the thing that the answer that you're giving is about the struggle itself. And the struggle itself as a given is, I wouldn't say but it's chauvinistic, but for sure it's a very male thing. Even if even if there was no national identity involved, even if it was Jews against Jews, it would be a very male-oriented, with guys running to the fore and how much gear that's going to get. I wanted to highlight a different issue, which was that the wall itself is, I think, in my interpretation, is a culmination of a late Zionist, or some people would say post-Zionist, desire in Israel to arrive at a complete separation, like Ehud Barak, our current defense minister used to say, we are here and there, there. This fantasy that Jews and Arabs can be cleanly separated, some would say ethnic cleansing, or whatever. It is inherent in the idea of this world. But the truth is that the Jews and Palestinians are never separated, and that's the big tragedy. I want to highlight that point to say there is a feminist movement within Palestinian society. Palestinian society is not only in Palestine, it continues to live in Israel. Members of my community, whether or not women are in the forefront throwing things or burning things, first of all, there are Palestinian women in the struggle, there are Palestinian women prisoners. And remember, Lina did an evening about it in Lubeck. They have an organization to support Palestinian prisoners, and they have to suffer from a double oppression where they don't get any support from the Palestinian Authority because these women are considered a bit weird, and of course they don't get any support from the Israeli or Jewish side. So there's a problem there. I'm just saying that it's not a solution, but it has been the mission of people in my, Jewish people in my community, to support and be in solidarity with feminist organizations in Palestinian society. They exist. It's not, one wants to shy away from cultural colonialism. It's not like we are bringing the light of feminism into dark Palestinian society, because you ought to be there. But there are existing structures there, whether or not they are in the actual struggle, and you do your utmost to support them, to show solidarity, to host them, to be in contact with them, as much as you are invited, and as much as your presence is wanted.
Anybody else?
Yes.
With the killing of Joher Abu Rahma, who was a woman who went to demonstrations, I wonder if you think, it's something I've been wondering myself, how this is going to affect women in the struggle, if this is going to maybe compel families to shut up their daughters more and keep them inside and say, don't do it, don't go out, or that women may come together more. She was my friend, and I knew her, or she was my cousin. You know, I wonder what your feeling is about how this is going to affect women in the struggle.
I think it's can be both,
sure.
And it's been both in some of the villages. Some villages, to a woman going in the front in the beginning of the demonstration, they start to get beaten up, and all the male population in the village freaked out. There's some places where women came week after week and confronted the soldiers. First of all, I don't think there's one answer, and I can't really say. It's like every person that dies doesn't mean the gender, you know. If a child dies, you ask, maybe there'll be no kids anymore in demonstrations. Even though, what is a demonstration? When the army invade your village, so you're anyway part of the struggle. You've been in your house, and you've been invaded by the army during a night raid, or
doing the demonstration themselves. They are part of the struggle anyway, because the army comes into the village, shoot into your house, arrest you, arrest your husband, wake you up in the middle of the night. And the question is, I don't know how much organization by women is going to be done. It's really a thing depends on a specific community, specific village. We had villages that women really stand in the front and were willing to lead the demonstrations. There actually was a strategy in many demonstrations, believing that a women presence will de-escalate, that the soldiers won't be that violent. Another thing that was proven to be wrong about soldiers, unfortunately. And I don't even know what to tell to you what is the best, the organizing and making more people at risk in the struggle, men or women, or I would like to see more women in any struggle that anyway is male dominated, with very chauvin sexist discourse. So I'm gonna say it's stormy.
I mean, I can speak to it as of May in the village. If you leave, there's a few families that are more active in the weekly demonstrations. Let's say Adib Abu Rahma's family. Adib is still in
no.
He was released from prison. So he has five daughters, and they're older. They used to. After talking to them about their participation in demonstrations. Kind of in the beginning of the living struggle, that what he was talking about, how the kind of creative nonviolent struggle that brought in a lot of people early on also had a lot of women from the village joining it. And what his older daughters were telling me is that once the wall was finished being built and once the demonstrations became kind of like having less of a creative and since then they found it less inspiring and also like a lot more violent. So it's you're walking on a weekly basis to the wall, and immediately you have this barrage of tear gas and rubber bullets, and sometimes live ammunition coming at you. At that point, they were both not inspired to go because it was no longer these creative things, and also it was because it was more violent. They said they weren't fine. But there's a newish film out called Boudreaux. I think, I don't know if it's played.
It's played here.
I heard it was. Was playing in the Bay Area now, and that was one of the first villages, I know you could speak better about it, but that was one of the first villages to have the joint struggle occurring, and that was led by women, pretty sure, at the beginning of it.
So I want to add a sentence, I promise not to make it very long. May I?
No, go to the corner and put your face.
I don't want to monopolize the day, I'm just saying that I have a feeling sometimes when I have these debates in the first world that some context is lost. We don't want to discuss the struggle as if there's a group. It's not like there's some tear gas and then 2 months goes by where everybody tends to their day happily and milk the cows and then some more tear gas. I want to contextualize it through, apropos of this question about women or girls, through an experience that I had, not in reality, but watching a film. If you're recommending books, I highly recommend a film called Aluna's Children, which is about a theater that took place in the city of Jenin. Just to tell you that I saw it with a Palestinian friend one day. I had already seen the film, and we saw it again. And the film, one of the characters that it follows is a young child, and you see him, follows him through like a decade or like a few years. As a child, his house was, what's his name? No, Chavel Shizavi.
Zacharias baby.
I'm just saying, you see how his house was broken down, etc., etc. And you see a group of children becoming more militant and veering towards more and more violent struggle as they become older, as they are exposed to increasing violence from the soldiers that they've known since they were like little children. And only when I watched it with this other woman did it occur to me to ask, whatever happened to two girls who are in this theater that the film follows? It sort of film glosses over these two girls, and I have this feminist critique of like, why aren't they shown being blah blah blah? Because they were killed sitting at home, you know? The other boys were running around being terrorists or whatever you want to call it and fighting and blah blah blah. So some were killed here, this guy was killed there, this guy was there. The little girls never went out and did anything, they just sat at home with their families. But they were killed too, so I'm sorry to over-dramatize. I'm just like,
it puts a whole different context onto. It's not a free society that's debating its feminist blah blah blah. It's people's lives are at stake in ways that are. You know what I'm saying? It's a bit of wishful thinking to even think about it in these terms. Did I make a point, or was it even down?
That was good.
Maybe can I say also a sentence on context too? In that I think, you know, because I was also in Palestine, there is this separation between the world of men and the world of women, and the demonstrations happen in the context of that separation. And for better or worse, the demonstrations are sort of part of this men's world. It's very difficult. You know, I think often, you know, it's difficult for me not to proselytize feminism, you know, and to come with the light to tell the brown people about this better way of living, you know, which is definitely not the right way to be an international solidarity activist, you know. But I do think that's also important context, is that there is, in life in general in Palestine, the world of men and the world of women, and so bringing women into the demonstrations, you know, sometimes that happens through calling women's demonstrations, you know. Although I don't think it happens very much, you know. And sometimes it happens through women's sewing collectives, and, you know, and through the olive oil harvest, and through other things. But to break down that barrier, I mean, there is also this larger barrier. So it's not just about getting women out to, like, militant demonstrations. It's also about breaking down that barrier between men's world and women's world, which many people don't want to do. You know, it's a totally different way of life. You know?
Anybody else?
That's why I said one thing. That movie Boudreaux is playing now. It's a Lumiere, and it's closing tomorrow. So my wife and I saw it this weekend, and it's great.
At the Lumiere, the one on Polk in California.
Yeah, California. Polk. But yeah, tomorrow's the last day there. I don't know about the East Bay.
Yeah, it's playing at one of their theaters in Berkeley, I think, too.
It's playing at Javits Center all week in Berkeley, all the way until Saturday.
And not like here. Tell them to give you your 3D glasses before you watch the movie, because we had a 3D effect without the glasses today. It's like, kind of didn't work. Yeah, I didn't watch the movie. I heard very good reviews. There's also Bilal Habibti, who was made in Israel and Palestine. Really not criticizing, but it's really important to put in a view. These two movies made on a struggle that is long time ago, and especially Boudreaux is 2003, 2004, so it's almost 7 years ago. And Bilal Habibti was done in 2005. To really get updates and stuff about what's happening these days, you should follow. Almost every village now have kind of media team. One of them are great, some of them are horrible. There's a lot of media coming out. As I said, active stills following every week to the demonstrations. Unfortunately, the Anarchists Against the Wall website has not been updated for 2 months. But I guess not always there's power to do all this stuff all the time. And the media team was a bit tired. Yeah.
If we wanted to share the films that you were showing us tonight with other people, are they available anywhere?
Come to me later. Well, if anybody interested, I need to make it... I will make it available online for non-commercial use, just for presentations. Our collective is based on donations. If you get donations, it's okay. If you don't get donation, it's also okay. For educational, informative stuff, it's more than welcome to get it.
For national erection.
I didn't finish.
Ahem.
Yeah, all the movies are on YouTube.
And if you want higher quality, let me know. If you know how to do it, you too. Just like a different thing. Anybody else?
People can check out the ISA website for information too, and the popular committee is
and the International Middle East Media Center has a lot of good updates too.
Yeah. There are many sources. Popular struggle definitely have the most updated with the international solidarity movement, but the popular struggle is not dependent on volunteers that come in and out, so they when in the ISM you might have weeks that there's nobody that actually functions as a media coordinator because they deported, raided, whatsoever. But both of them are very good sources. Also the International Middle Eastern Media
Center, yeah.
Center. And also as the Alternative Information Center, this is where I would look for more written word. And if you want some of the stuff from tonight, you can always email the anarchist contact list and say, we saw this guy in the San Francisco, can you forward him my request for whatever, or through Axis too. We have shirts. Forgot to remember to say. You, Gabby.
Look how great these shirts are.
This is a shirt, and we have zines. You're welcome to look at it over there. Unfortunately, the small sizes being already sold out through the tour, so we have large and double extra larges and few extra larges, and the zine. Oh, and also buttons, I think. You're welcome to look at it. I want to thank Station 40 for hosting us. You all for coming here tonight. And yeah, I didn't watch Occupation Has No Future, but I'm being interviewed for it.
I think you're in.
Yeah, I mean it. So if you want to watch me again, come to the movie in 2 weeks, even though I'm only for 1 minute tomorrow, something like that. But it looked like a great trailer, and I hope it's a great movie. I'm sure it's a great movie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.